This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with
Frida Liu
and Audrey Raj.
Frida, what are you doing here today?
Oh, just, you know, want to be with you.
Says, right. So, right, ladies and gents, top of the show. If you want to get in touch with the show today, which I think you might want to do, we want to get some feedback about Facebook, get us on 018-789-8899, or, of course, on Twitter at BFM Radio. Stories we will be covering today, if you've not already heard enough about it, of course, will be some Facebook news. We'll be talking about how to protect your data on Facebook and some other things. Then moving on to yet another data breach from the travel company Orbit. Moving on to story number three, which is Google are launching a big news initiative to help fight false news and help publishers make a little bit of money. Frida has a story about four questions you should ask yourself before you quit. Wrapping up with, are biometrics becoming the new norm for making payments in Singapore? Audrey, take it away.
Yes, so the big Facebook story. So overnight, we've seen the hashtag delete Facebook gain traction on Twitter, especially thanks, of course, to news reports claiming that a company called Cambridge Analytica used personal data from 50 million Facebook users to influence the U.S. presidential election back in 2016. So if you want to know how bad the accusations are against Facebook or how big a role they allegedly played in helping Trump win, you just have to listen to some of the quotes that surfaced during the Channel 4 expose on Cambridge Analytica. My favorites being, Facebook was our hands-on partner, and without Facebook, we wouldn't have won. Literally.
Wow.
Right. So there have also been accusations that Cambridge Analytica were involved in Malaysia's GE13 too.
And Brexit, from what I understand as
well. Yes. So with this whole theme trending, more people are talking about how unhappy they've been with Facebook to begin with and how they now want to get out, you know. And there's another, theme going on Twitter, something about, we've moved on from MySpace, we've moved on from Friendster, we can move on from Facebook too.
They are declining in number though, aren't they?
Yes, they are. So if you're thinking about what kind of data that Facebook actually has on you, well, this Austrian...
Everything,
right? Well, this Austrian privacy advocate, his name is Max Schrem, he made a request to Facebook back in 2011 to find out what kind of data they had on him. And he was given a CD with 1,200 files stored on it. So he found that the social network kept records of all the IP addresses of machines he used to access the site, a full history of messages and chats, his location, and even items that he thought he had deleted, such as messages, status updates, and even his posts on his wall, right?
They'd still got that information.
Yes, they still had it. And in a world where Facebook information is shared widely with third parties via those little apps, right? Making such a request to get what kind of data that Facebook is holding on you is almost impossible, right? So is deleting Facebook the only way to protect your data? What do you guys think?
According to Paul Bernal, he's a lecturer in information technology, intellectual property and media law at the University of East Anglia. He goes on to say there really is only one way to make sure your data remains entirely private, and that's leave Facebook. Mm-hmm. And as we've seen, that's trending on Twitter right now. The hashtag delete Facebook is, you know, it's trending over there. I don't know. I mean,
yeah, because if it's not Facebook, something else will appear.
Correct.
That's the thing, because Facebook and Instagram, they're owned by the same people.
And WhatsApp.
Right. So does that mean you have to delete WhatsApp and Instagram as well?
So the former co-creator of WhatsApp tweeted yesterday with that same hashtag, you know, delete Facebook. Tim Berners-Lee, arguably the father of the internet, has also said we need to reassess the way in which we look at the internet and the way in which we share data and one thing or another. I mean, but here's the thing. What Facebook did technically is not illegal according to their, you know.
I think the moment you sign on Facebook, the T's and C's, do you really read it?
Do we really read the T's and C's on anything that we sign? It's so long. Most of the time, you just agree and move on to the next slide, right?
Right, yeah. That's the problem.
But here's Facebook's biggest plus point. It's used by millions around the world to keep in touch with family and friends that, I mean, we know more about our family and friends from across the seas now than we ever have, you know?
For sure.
Yeah, you know, your relative's first day at school, like, you know, in North America, and you know about it. Just, I mean, thanks to Facebook. Do you see any other means to do this online other than Facebook?
Well, that's the problem, right? They've kind of got us by the short and curlies almost, mm-hmm. you know, and it's a real big issue. But it's really affected Facebook in terms of their share price. I believe their valuation dropped by $50 billion.
That is just ridiculous.
In the last 24 hours. And Mark Zuckerberg was smart enough to sell a bunch of his shares just before this news came out. So,
yeah,
you know,
but last week and over the last 3 months, he's kind of dumped quite a bit of his Facebook shares. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know. Again, that's that kind of thing where you go, surely he must have had a little bit of a heads up about
it. Inkling.
He must have had an inkling for sure. But what worries me, though, Auds, is the amount of time that the data is stored on their servers, for example. And they're there forever. You know,
it's indefinite.
It's there forever.
Yeah.
Even once you've decided to cancel your account, they kind of put you on this pause period where, you know, you can go back at any time and pick up from where you left off.
Right.
So you're never actually completely deleting yourself or your information. Also, because if you've already been on Facebook, then your friends have posted stuff about you. So if they're still online, then your data is still there as well.
Yeah.
Or sometimes unknowingly, you know, you're tagged or your photographs are part of your friends' posts, or you go to an event and you're there as well. So there's no escaping this.
It's Hotel California.
It is.
So how do you protect your data if you still need Facebook and there's no escaping Facebook? So the first thing you've got to do is stop taking random quizzes. Now, we've all seen those quizzes, you know.
It's
like,
me!
Yes, Frida.
Test your IQ, reveal your inner personality. Which Hollywood actor will you end up marrying?
Mm.
You know, those quizzes, they look completely they look completely harmless, but this is what happened with the US elections, right? Because it was information from one such Facebook quiz. This is your digital life that Cambridge Analytica is alleged to have used to harvest the data of those 50 million Facebook users. So, they may look harmless, but Frida, please stop doing those quizzes.
Okay.
Next, you can keep an eye on apps, especially those which require you to log in using your Facebook account. They often have a very wide range of permissions, and many are specifically designed to pick up your data. Also, you can use an ad blocker to limit advertising that is sent to you. Look at your Facebook security settings and make sure you are aware of what is enabled. Check the individual app settings to see whether you have given them permission to view your friends as well as yourself. Now, that's important. Mm-hmm. Also, you can download a copy of the data Facebook holds on you. It's not comprehensive, but it might give you an idea of what kind of data you're sharing with Facebook and data of your friends that you're sharing with Facebook and other apps.
Right. I suppose the question we should be asking folks out there then, has this scared you a little bit? Will you in fact be deleting Facebook? You know, do let us know. Get us on WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or on Twitter at BFM Radio. Even if you're not deleting Facebook, has it made you think twice about perhaps thinking which Hollywood celebrity you might marry? Anyway, let's move on to our next story very quickly. Travel booking website Orbitz, they've announced yet another data breach. They've discovered a potential data breach that exposed information for thousands of customers, as reported to the Engadget website. The incident discovered by the company on March the 1st may have exposed information tied to around 880,000 credit cards. Wow. So the consumer data in question is from an older booking platform where information may have been accessed between October and December 2017. So the data was booked via Amex Travel sometime between January 1st, 2016 and December 22nd, 2017. May also have been compromised. They are owned by Expedia, of course. They're saying that names, payment card information, dates of birth, email addresses, physical billing addresses, gender, phone numbers have been accessed, but it doesn't yet have direct evidence that any information was taken from the website. But if you have used Orbitz at all in the last year or so, it may be worth just checking on that to find out whether or not some of your data has been in breach. Not for the last year, but I did about 18 months ago.
Should we just accept that this is game over, that everyone has our data
to one side
or another?
One way or another, somebody knows everything about us, you know? A little bit terrifying. Anyway, we have to take a short break. We've got some new order coming up with 60 miles an hour here on Enterprise BizBytes. Don't forget, 018-789-8899 is the number to WhatsApp us. Get us on Twitter at BFM Radio. You're listening to Enterprise BizBytes on BFM 89.9.
Barcelona, Fiorentina, Manchester United. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. We started off the show with how you can protect your data from Facebook, and for companies that are mining, in fact, your data, we asked you a question. Has it, in fact, worried you to the point where maybe you are deleting Facebook or you're taking other measures? We've had a few messages come in so far. What have we got, Audrey?
Yeah, so Anton says, I thought at the time Facebook should have been blocked from taking over WhatsApp. We don't want a monopoly of any kind, right?
Yeah.
And then Ghazi says, the discussion around Facebook and the TNC regarding any software, the only choice available for any user is to agree if you want to use the software. You are unable to install the software if you choose to disagree. So
true.
Do you really have a choice, right? And then Ian said, I don't think deleting Facebook will make any difference. There's Google too. Oh yeah, and there's also WhatsApp. Big Brother, and he's referring to Mark Zuckerberg, is recording this conversation as well.
He probably is. Hi Mark. Speaking about Google, of course, that is our next story, how they've pledged $300 million to clean up false news in a move to combat the epidemic. They're pledging to spend $300 million over the next 3 years to support, get this, authoritative journalism. Google's campaign, which was announced at an event in New York on Tuesday, will be known as the Google News Initiative. Among the initiative's goals are making it easier for Google users to subscribe to news publications, giving publishers new tools to create fast-loading mobile pages. The project is Google's most ambitious attempt yet to improve the quality of information it shows the users at a time when tech companies have come under criticism for letting hoaxes and misinformation bloom on their services. Okay, we need to talk about this a little bit, don't we?
$300 million.
$300 million. A dip of their toes in a massive ocean, I think that is. That's nothing. I mean, I was having a discussion with Audrey Frieder outside of the studio, how we were talking about the proliferation of news stories that are not accurate, whether it comes via WhatsApp or whatever. And we look at these things that we talk about on a regular basis, and we know that, obviously, that our data has been manipulated one way or another. We're also looking at stuff where our Google searches are also being manipulated.
Our news feeds are being crafted.
Everything has been crafted for us. So the idea of Google now standing up and saying, look, we're going to help fix this. They were, you know, the creators of the problem, arguably. And I think $300 million is just not doing us an awful lot of favors. You know, they've got to go back to the drawing board and really help us out with this, right?
Yeah, I agree. And then, you know, we were talking about this conspiracy theory that I've had for quite a while. I think this was the plan all along. So the effects or the consequences of the emergence of fake news, I feel, has been amplified so that more people would only trust legit sources and go back to paying for your legitimate news sources or authoritative journalism, as they're calling it. I think this is how they plan to survive the whole print apocalypse.
This is Jimmy Wales, who came by last year, and he started, I think it's called Wikinews, right? And his goal was to do fair reporting, and of course the same model, I think, no advertising as well. So I don't know though whether, you know, who decides what's real and what's not real though. You know, what's conspiracy, what's not conspiracy, right? You know, so I mean, of course, this is happening in Malaysia right now as well. We're developing these laws and rules around what's fake news. Who decides what's real? What's
exactly.
Fake?
I mean, and if you've got one news outlet, for example, overseas, delivering one story from an authoritative news outlet, you know, and then yet you've got somebody in another country arguing that that is fake news, which then is real.
Yeah, what happens then? Is it labeled as fake news? But when it comes from a legit source?
Correct.
How then?
So, I mean, according to Richard Gingras, he is Google's vice president of news products, he said that the company have built new tools, including some already in operation, to prevent malicious actors from gaming its search algorithms to spread disinformation. He pointed to the search results for the shooting at a Maryland high school early on Tuesday. Unlike the search results from similar previous shootings, which surfaced stories from hoax websites and toxic message boards, the results of both Google and YouTube for topics related to the Maryland shooting were dominated by stories from legitimate mainstream publications. So it looks like, you know, they're tweaking their algorithms. But then again, like you say, Ords, you know, who determines what is legitimate? And is it country-specific? Is it state-specific? How would that work? Because I'm sure that there would be you know, governments and politicians who would like tailored news sources, right?
Right, of course. And also, let's just talk about the money, because one part of this Google News initiative is something called Subscribe with Google that makes it easier for readers to pay for content from news organizations that have agreed to partner with Google, right? So when they announced this, the company said that this program is not intended to shift media reliance on advertising revenue to subscription-based models. This is what Google executives emphasize. It's becoming more acceptable to subscribe for services like Netflix and Spotify. So Google believes consumers, especially millennials, are open to paying for content if it's easy to do so.
Absolutely disagree. Millennials do not want to pay for unnecessary things.
Yeah.
And more to the point, people like me, in fact, sometimes feel as though I shouldn't have to pay for news. And I know there's a lot of people out there going, right. I completely disagree with that. And people who have their own websites that deliver good quality journalism, I think is something worth paying for.
Rich, what do we do right now? You know, if we are pushed an article that says you have to pay to read the rest of it, what we do is we just Google that article
and
again.
And you will find a free version.
Anyway. Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
exactly. This is how the nature of the beast is now, you know.
Whole books have been sent.
But this is how we work. We are so used to looking at the internet and finding free things, whether it be films or music or news sources. It's been given to us over the past decade, over the past 20 years, if you argue. And that is ingrained in our behavior when we use the internet now. It's not a consumer problem. It's the problem coming from the people who are giving us this stuff. They need to find a new model to make it approachable for everybody, you know. And if you can find a way of delivering good news in a way that is free, in part, people will use it and they will pay attention to it. And these fake news sites will just die a death.
And you can charge a premium for advertising on these sites.
That's where the money should come from. It should be the advertisers that pay and not the consumers, in my humble opinion anyway. Right?
No, I'm just thinking as well, right? I mean, even when we look at these articles, sometimes they come out supposedly real news or whatever. The research shows, you know, they've done some research, but we always ask, wonder what the methodology was behind the research. Was it purposely skewed in another way so that we'll get the results we want? So there's that as well. It may come from a reliable source, but if they have an objective for it to be in a certain way, what's real? You know what I mean? There are a lot of these things that go on behind the scenes as
well.
So. We're so jaded.
We are.
We're so jaded.
We are indeed. Right, we have to take a short break.
Have a song.
Some music coming up. Ironically, it's the Blue Tones. We're all a bit blue. Blue Tonic coming up here on BFM. Again, though, we are asking the question. We started off the show with a story about how you can protect your data on Facebook from being mined from a bunch of companies. Are you, in fact, thinking about deleting Facebook? Are you following this Twitter trend? Let us know via WhatsApp, 018-789-8899, or get us on Twitter. We are at BFM Radio. Music coming right up here on Enterprise BizBytes. BFM 89.9.
Balanced Frank Medium. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with
Frida Liu
and Audrey Raj.
Started off the show today with a story about how you can protect your data from Facebook. Of course, it's been all over the news recently. It was on the Morning Run earlier on today. It's been trending on Twitter. Delete Facebook is the current hashtag. We asked you whether or not you are considering deleting Facebook or doing something related. We've had a few messages so far. Another one came in during the break.
Yes, so this one says, to protect data, don't install any app on your phone and use these services via websites. That will have a big impact on the data they can access from your phone. And if using these services, this of course, if using these services is really unavoidable.
All right. Okay.
Yeah, so yeah, I know you got a story, but I was just thinking about that comment as well, right? So you don't put these things on your smartphone, which most people have. So even the likes of your Grab app or your Uber app and all that, that's got your information as well. But anyway.
They have, yes. So while we're on the subject of quitting things, go on.
I don't know if this story connects about, you know, four questions to ask before you quit something. I don't know if we can connect this with Facebook, but anyway, this is a really great story here. It says, and the Fast Company article here, and we're always led to believe the best approach to life is to never give up.
Yes.
Right. And, you know, I think Churchill said it 3 times, right? And while perseverance and grit are essential success, so is knowing when to walk away. And sometimes I think this is really difficult. So 4 questions to consider if you're thinking about quitting something. So, you know, just looking at it and just trying to make some connections with my own life as well. The first one you have to ask yourself is, why did I pursue this in the first place, right? And this is really, really important when we get started on something and when it gets a bit tough, we say, why am I doing
doing this?
Yeah, regularly. What am I doing? Why am I doing this?
Alison Gabriel Rossetti, a professor of management psychology at the University of Arizona, said that told Fast Company that when an employee is going through tough times at work, they should remind themselves of why they accepted the job when they started. Understanding their why and examining whether or not that aligns with their role allows the employee to make a more rational decision on whether they should stay or go. If they find that what they're doing still very much aligns with their why, it may be a sign that a challenge is just something they need to weather. On the other hand, if they are dissatisfied because the job is not aligned with their why, then quitting may be a smarter decision. And I don't want to label this under the millennials and all this sort of thing, but I think just generally as well, you know, when things get a bit tough, you know what I mean? Even our daily job, right? We may love what we're doing, but there are going to be elements that we don't like, and there'll be bad days and
for
all
sure.
that, right? But you always have to remember why you joined the organization in the first place, because there are going to be periods, there are going to be seasons when it's really bad, but you have to remember.
There's a bigger picture.
There's a bigger picture, right? That's happening at 2 o'clock. But, you know, so that's you know, but people are very quick to just say, I'm not happy, and they want to quit, and they forget.
But then there was that, when I was growing up, you know, you look at people's CVs from kind of my generation before, it was like you tended to stay in jobs for a lot longer. Mm. You know, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years was kind of the norm. Yeah. And then my brother's generation, just a few years later, you'd have employers who were like, why did you stay in this job for so long? And they kind of expected you to move around a little
bit. Like, did you not care about your growth?
Right.
In your career growth, your personal growth.
Correct, right.
Wow. And now it's acceptable to just stay in a company for 2 years and move on.
Right.
That's an acceptable tenure, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Second question. So, still linking back, why do I feel the need to quit? So, again, we want to quit something when it makes us unhappy, uncomfortable, but also at the same time, there could be a reason as well. So, this is a recruiting specialist, Skip Hall. He previously wrote, said, pride or prestige should never be the only reason for making a move.
Right.
There's so many other factors to weigh in, even the harder to see. If you left your corporate executive role because you are frustrated with the lack of autonomy and quitting your business venture, say you're in business, meant going back to that, you'll probably find yourself unhappier if you quit being an entrepreneur. On the other hand, he said that when your values don't align with what you're doing, you probably won't be able to make yourself happy in the long term. If you can't go home at the end of the day feeling proud of the decisions you made at work, it's time to consider a move. So if in the course of your entrepreneurial journey, you realize that you do thrive better as an employee, then quitting your business venture might be the right thing to do. And we've had guests come on as well who have quit business and gone back to work and everything, and they don't feel, very few and far between coming on air to talk about it, but there's no shame in that. I remember just talking to Hui Matthews from Ashby Nimble, and it's just like, you know, I wasn't spending time with my family, I was stressing out, I was, you know, looking at my employees and thinking having to pay them first, and I'm thinking, how long is this going to go for? And maybe at that life stage, when they were very young kid, it didn't feel like the right time.
Right, yeah.
You know, so, you know, just being clear with that. The third is, have I done everything I can to make this work for me? So entrepreneurs do this all the time by pivoting their businesses when one avenue doesn't work. So what happened is Nama Bloom, founder of tampon subscription service HelloFlow, which was later acquired by another company, realized...
What a great name!
I know, HelloFlow. Realized that her customers wanted information more than anything else. So she focused her energy on developing content and working brands to scale her business rather than her initial product-based idea. So maybe it's time to pivot. And there'll be times, however, when no amount of pivot will lead to the results you want. When the co-founders of Brooklyn Kitchen were approached to build a store in Manhattan, they viewed it as a great business opportunity, but the store never took off and they decided to abandon the project after a year. It was clear that no matter what they did, the concept they were trying to sell would just not stick. So, you know, so in the, they said that we would have been sunk if we had waited any longer. So sometimes also when you're in a sinking ship, you know, you can try to change your business idea and all that, but if it doesn't work, then maybe it's just time to call it quits. I know it's tough. It's tough because you put blood, sweat and tears.
But at least at the end of the day, you can say, I've tried everything.
Mm.
You know, at least you've exhausted all avenues to try and make this work, and then you quit.
Yeah. And then, of course, like, I'm sure it's the issues of funding and all that. And if it's just a different direction you've moved as well. Okay. And the fourth question you have to ask, what do I have to gain by quitting? So everything you do has an opportunity cost, whether you choose to do something or not. And sometimes quitting something means you gain more resources to do something that's more important to you. This author, Eric Barker, he wrote this book in Barking Up the Wrong Tree, The Surprising Science Behind Why Everything You Know About Success is Mostly Wrong. He shared the story of a man called Spencer Glendon, who suffered from chronic ulcerative colitis in high school. And due to his weakened immune system, he was instructed to focus on just accomplishing one thing a day. So that's what he did. Sometimes as simple as cooking a dinner, and other times it was something else. And he quickly learned that quitting something that wasn't that important to him freed him to do the things he really wanted to do. In other words, he had a lot to gain by quitting. See, I don't quit, right? I don't even start. Like cooking. Right? I outsource. I get it catered to me because I think my time is well spent.
When was the last time you cooked?
Oh, I can't remember. Oh, putting the chicken in the oven?
I don't know. You tell me.
Would be last year.
Last year.
Yeah,
wow.
Once. Okay. Right? But, you know, so I don't even quit. So I'm not a quitter.
Because you don't start. Right. Makes sense. Absolutely.
Right. You know, but the opportunity cost is time not spent.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't
feel as though you're getting what you need out of it, right?
Yeah. So there you go.
Very quickly, the four things were, why did I pursue this in the first place? And number two, why do I feel the need to quit? Ask yourself that. Have I done everything I can to make this work for me? And finally, what do I have to gain by quitting? In Frida's case, more time not cooking. Right. We are asking you a question. We started off with a story about how Facebook and other companies have been mining data and storing it and using it for nefarious purposes. There is now a hashtag trending on Twitter. It is hashtag delete Facebook. Let us know. Have you had any thoughts about this? Are you considering deleting Facebook? Are you a little bit scared, perhaps, about how your data is being shared? Let us know. Get us on WhatsApp, 018-789-8899, or on Twitter at BFM Radio. Final story coming up after these messages. It is a story about biometrics in Singapore. BFM 89.9.
Barry fronts Motown. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. It's almost time for us to wrap up the show, but we've got one more story. Before we get to that, though, quick reminder, 018-789-8899, in case you want to add anything to the topic of the hashtag delete Facebook. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with
Frida Liu
and Audrey Raj.
Our final story of the day is about, are biometrics becoming the new norm for making payments in Singapore?
Apparently it is.
It is?
It is. Now, do either of you use biometrics to, say, unlock your phones?
Yes. I also use it to unlock one, so I can quickly check my balance on the CIMB banking app.
Mm. So is this facial recognition or your fingerprint?
Fingerprint. I don't think it was a choice.
Yeah. I had the old phone, so no facial recognition stuff. I'm not that rich yet.
Yeah. And you're comfortable with this?
When it works, yeah.
Of course. Yeah. Well, biometrics are apparently fast becoming the preferred mode of payment among Singaporeans, according to a recent survey by Visa. So,
They just don't want to type in their PIN numbers. That's all it is.
They don't want to have to worry about PIN numbers and remembering passwords, is what I thought too. So, based on a study of adult consumers in Singapore who use at least one credit card, debit card, or mobile pay, more than half of respondents have already used at least one form of biometric authentication to verify their identity or make payments. So fingerprint recognition, facial recognition, iris scanning, and voice recognition too. So almost all Singaporeans surveyed, more than 96% of them have indicated an interest in using biometric methods to verify their identity and make payments. They say it is faster, easier, and more secure than traditional passwords. Plus, you don't have to remember multiple passwords or PINs.
96%?
Yes, 96-97%. So this begs the question, right? Are they doing this because they believe this provides greater privacy, or is it just because of the convenience?
I think it's convenience.
It's convenience. Yeah. I mean, I'm not too sure about voice recognition because it's so easy to just record and do that, right? Mm-hmm.
I'm still iffy about facial recognition, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because there are
certain... have a twin.
If you have an identical twin?
A double ganger.
Yeah. Also, there have been phones which have like this facial recognition feature on their cameras where if you scan your face or try and take a selfie, it will tell you your gender and your approximate age, right? And most females I know come up as male and like 20 years older or 20 years younger than they are. So,
what kind of friends do you have?
What kind of a system is this on the phone is my question.
And,
right?
And this fingerprint thing, I always worry that someone's going to chop off my thumb.
Wow. What are we living in, like, cold war Europe?
I've watched too many movies.
My word,
Frida. I think the cooking needs to come into play.
Absolutely.
Maybe less TV might help.
Stay away from the sharp objects, though, please.
Yeah, so interestingly, the general view is that fingerprint recognition is the most desired form of biometric authentication in Singapore, followed by eye scanning, and then comes facial recognition for both online payments and in-store purchases. And for those who have yet to use biometric authentication in Singapore, 91% of them stated that they would likely use it in form of any kind of bank service.
I'm interested to know, though, the results of the kind of age group that they were polling for this. Because I know for a fact that if you ask my mother this question,
right,
she would be like, no, I want a PIN number or I want a password.
And you have to realise this is Singapore.
Yeah.
Safe.
Yeah.
You know, everything is like, you know, you won't get away with murder. We will find you, you know. So what more with this? So I think where they're coming from as well, you know how you got Singaporean friends and they're carrying their handbag and tell them, hey, you know, you got to carry your handbag the right place. So I think that's where their state is in the first place when they're doing it, just they feel more secure out in Singapore.
Yeah, maybe. Or just, what do you use? The thumbprint thing or what?
I don't have a password because what's the point? Everyone knows my password anyway. I can't keep my password secure for more than 2 days.
Really?
I'm just really bad at
really? Yes. Oh dear, oh dear. Right, it's almost time for us to wrap up then, is it, I suppose?
Yeah.
We've had a bunch of stories. Let's quickly run through what we've covered today. Of course, we did start off with how to protect your Facebook data, right? Oh, it's a bit more about that.
Yes, this whole delete Facebook hashtag that's going on Twitter, the whole fiasco with Cambridge Analytica and its effects. Are you thinking about deleting your Facebook as well? That's why we spoke about how to protect your Facebook data. If you decide to continue.
Yeah, thanks for all the feedback as well, folks. Do keep that up throughout the afternoon. I'm sure there'll be more people asking this question as well. We then moved on to a very quick story about how Orbit, the travel website, announced that it discovered a potential data breach that exposed information for thousands of customers, around 880,000 credit cards worth of data. We then looked at how Google have pledged $300 million to clean up false news. And then,
four questions to ask before you quit something.
There
yes.
you go.
And then finally, that story about biometrics becoming the new norm for making payments in Singapore.
All right. What have we got? You got something else you want to
add? Oh, yes. I just wanted to just let you know that BFM will be having our network series next Wednesday. And this is in line with International Women's Day, hashtag Press for Progress. And we're talking to three women who have done amazing things with things with their companies. And one of which is Lavini Tiruchelvam from Baby Dash. And they're an online baby store. And what was very interesting was they broke the equity crowdfunding record last year, working with Pitchin Equity. They raised over $1.5 million, attracting a lot of investors. Another one is Charlotte Axel from the ASEAN Data Analytics Exchange, ADEX. They're involved in training data professionals, and they have plans to train about get 2,000 data scientists by 2020. And then we have Brand International, which is a BPO company, excess 30 million in revenues, and they're going to go for an IPO exercise in 2019. So these are amazing businesswomen, and they'll be on a panel next Wednesday, March 28th at Alia. That's in the close to the in the KL area. But go to our web, go to bfm.my/network series to register for that event.
Great. Here's another panel for you coming up after the 1 o'clock news. It is about stateless children, how through no fault of their own they inherit circumstances that limit their ability to fully participate in society. The issue is also made complicated by the lack of awareness of the distinction between statelessness and undocumented. To get a better understanding, the Breakfast Grill spoke with Marianne Clark Hatting, the UNICEF's representative to Malaysia, and Dr. Hartini Zainuddin, the founder of Yayasan Chow Kit. That's all coming up after the 1 o'clock news. My name is Rich Bradbury. On behalf of Frida Liu and Audrey Raj, this has been Enterprise BizBite. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place, from deepest, darkest Banda Otama. You are listening to Big Country here in a big country on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.